You know the director of Homestead? His name is Ben Smallbone.
Yeah.
He's got a small bone.
He got a little dick.
Fucking idiot. He got a small bone.
Yeah, the Smallbone family. They're Australian Christians, evangelicals who wanted to break into.
Oi, it's me, Ben Smallbone. I'm directing a movie here called Homestead.
Don't touch my penis. did we?
A succulent Chinese meal. We're enjoying a film, a succulent Christian film.
Are we recording just the whereby? Or are we going to record?
That's fine. Right. It always works. Don't touch my penis.
Don't touch my penis. He's touching my penis.
What does he say? Oh, goodbye. At the very end. Ta-ta.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest.
That's this movie. This is Homestead.
This is Homestead Manifest.
This is America Manifest.
Home, home on the range, where the deer and the antelope play, where seldom is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day.
How often at night, when the heavens are bright with the light.
Oh, it came. Your little, what's it called? Everlasting.
My other package of cards haven't. No, Enduring Vitality, I still don't have it. It's lost in the mail.
Enduring Fluid Retention, is that what it's called? In your dumb little
Enduring world? Vitality does sound like a fucking, like a no boner fap. Pill. No yeah, or like a, yeah. It sounds like a, one of those dude bro fucking pill companies.
Hey, fellas. This enduring episode vitality. Of Propaganda is brought to you by Enduring Vitality. Personally, I don't need it. But
yeah. Actually, it's for other guys, not me. It's for other kinds of guys who have problems with their dicks, but not me.
It's for the kind of guys that listen to our podcast.
This is a foil old border swords to plowshares. Very nice.
How much did that cost?
$350, I think. Oh, something else came in the mail. You want to see something cool?
Sure.
It went in the special box. So don't tell my wife. Good thing my wife doesn't listen to the podcast, and we also might cut this. So this is a very old Magic card. This is a Plateau. It's one of the cheaper dual lands. They're mountains, and this one's a mountain and a plains, right?
Okay.
So you know how basic lands, they just like throw them in the garbage, they're so cheap. Mm-hmm. So this card, by being both of those, it has no other abilities. It's just a mountain and a plains. This card is, which is quite damaged and worn, is about $200.
So do you normally play red and white decks?
No, I've been playing five color decks. And I didn't have all the bad ones. The ones that aren't blue and the ones that aren't green, I didn't have them. So I finally gave myself a little Christmas present and I bought the last three.
I had some stuff coming in mail. I got with all my Christmas cash, I got a Steam Deck, which I'm very stoked on. Been playing some Metal Gear Revengeance. I got a MP3 player. That's Evangelion aesthetics.
Oh, yeah, you showed me.
Which is like really cool to me. And then I bought some hemp linen pants. And I got them in the mail today. And wouldn't you know it, my booty too big.
Connor's got smokable pants.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm on Manjaro, so hopefully I'll lose a little bit of weight and then I'll fit in my pants.
Look at all these dual lands, baby. Oh, yeah. Those are the good ones. Daddy loves his babies.
Meanwhile, your actual son is just like...
He's fine.
I guess we can get started. Hey, Propagandos. Welcome. It's Thursday, January 16th. It's an evening.
Are our fans Propagandos? Or are we the Propagandos? I'm not sure how this works.
I call them Propagandos.
We're 30 episodes in, and I have no idea what the premise of the game is.
You know what, fans? If you've got an answer to this, we got a fucking Discord that none of y'all are joining. So
And if someone with another podcast is listening to it, yes, we'll post in yours, but you need to post in ours too.
Yes. Bossum, I've been pretty active in the West Bank, and I've been pretty active in the West Bank robbery Discord this week because, well, actually, this leads great into our first topic of today. I was talking about Xiao Hong Shu in
who?
Xiao Hong Shu, me. I've been talking about that in the West Bank robbery Discord. Alec and I signed up for Xiao Hong Shu. Now that TikTok's dying, which looks like it's not going to. Geez, insert clip of us saying that.
Yeah, who could have predicted it? Clip here of Connor predicting it.
So yeah, Alec and I, we signed up for Xiao Hong Shu, which is the Red Note. It's a colloquial term for Mao's little red book. So if TikTok wasn't propagandist enough for you, welcome to Xiao Hong Shu.
Which I don't think a lot of American TikTok users know.
No, of course not. I mean, they're learning it now that they're on Xiao Hong Shu.
Is this true?
And like, you know, a lot of the content that I've been seeing, ironically enough, posted on TikTok or Instagram of people posting on Xiao Hong Shu is about them like learning about Chinese culture, saying like, oh, if America goes to war with China, I'm defecting to China. Thank you, President and glorious leader Xi Jinping. I got to say, this exodus from TikTok to Xiao Hong Shu, it just feels like an ironic teenage rebellion. Like, it just seems like they don't really like the app because, as Alec and I can tell you, it's all in fucking Chinese.
Yeah, it's not usable, right? When I saw those like cute videos of people being like, oh, they're welcoming us in Chinese. I'm learning Chinese words, and people like reading off of Google Translate. I was like, this is cute. Let me check this out. Then I'm like, oh, there's an English language option. It doesn't translate any of the posts. All the posts are in Chinese. Oh, all yeah of them. It's impossible to use.
Bossum's been messaging me in Chinese. I'm like, I don't know what you're saying.
It's so sick, dude.
I don't know what this means.
It'd be really funny if somebody actually learned, like, there's got to be a couple people that are like, nope, fuck it. I'm learning Mandarin. I'm not going back to TikTok.
There probably are. Duolingo saw a spike in people signing up for Mandarin classes on their app. So one thing that's really interesting about this is that Chinese and American users on this app are actually exchanging information and cutting through all the propaganda lens that their respective countries set up for them. So, you know, like, Americans are learning, oh, China isn't this like evil boogeyman that I've been told, where they're like, we have to send fentanyl to America now. Like, that's not what they're really like. And China is learning that, no, it's not actually propaganda that we have to pay to use an ambulance.
You're right.
That's true. That is what America is like.
America is as bad or worse than you thought. And China's quite a bit better.
I have seen some people in my personal life, they told me like, oh, I don't really want to post. I signed up for Xiao Hong Shu, but I don't want to post there because I'm concerned about cultural takeover. It's like, hey, look, the nation of China is not a marginalized community. It is a
cultural takeover. What does that even mean?
That would be like if I were to try to make a name for myself on like Black Twitter.
Wait, they're Chinese.
Yeah, they're not Chinese American. This is it's a nation of a billion people running laps around.
We're not going to like make them do other stuff. we're like guests on their app, who, by the way, they've gone back to just doing Chinese stuff. They're like, okay, you guys are here. We're done posting about how like doing this like friendship dance with you guys. We're going to go back to posting like noodles and stuff. That's what they post about, right?
It's just interesting to hear how people are talking about it because they think they're getting woke points, right? But it's actually, no, you're kind of perpetuating this like third world community kind of narrative. Like, dude, they're making electric vehicles that can outperform Tesla. What are you doing right now? Like,
in some Chinese cities, the standard of living is higher than our median. So just chill, guys. Yeah. They're doing all right.
And honestly, if you look at a lot of the content on Xiao Hong Shu in that honeymoon phase of, you know, Americans coming over there, they're excited. They want a cultural exchange. They want to see how Americans post because they usually aren't allowed to see how Americans post. So please use this opportunity, this brief window, however long we have it, because the wording of that TikTok ban bill is going to fucking ban Xiao Hong Shu
Go on there, make a million videos of the Baconator and post them all over there. Unwrapping it, eating it in your car, throwing it in a garbage can, buying another one.
Make a series of eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner at the same fast food restaurant.
In your car, all three times.
Just show them like, see, this is what happens when you have democracy and the freedom of choice.
That's right. This is America. This is what we brought to Iraq.
just pulling up in a pickup truck. It's like, I'm about to show y'all in China how we do things over here in America. Yeah, could I get a anyway, this episode is not about Zhao Hongshu. We just wanted to talk about it because we signed up for it to see like what all the hubbub was about. Today we are talking about Homestead, Angel Studios' latest post-apocalyptic Christian drama.
I'd prefer to talk about Red Note the entire episode. I'm not going to lie.
No, we have to do this.
So yet again, I'll be honest. Yet again, Connor diligently went to a pre-release screening of this that he got through some email service he signed up with through Angel Studios or something.
Well, I have an Angel Studios account, and so I get advanced screening opportunities for every single Angel Studios screening. And I decided, hell yeah, I'm going to go to this one. I'm going to go see Homestead. And Alec, we tried to plan it so that you would come see it with me, but you've got a wife and child that were like, what are you fucking doing? No, you're not going all the way to Texas to go see this stupid fucking movie.
It was like on a Wednesday too.
Yeah.
But then Connor had the diligence to go see it again. And I basically never saw it. And Connor had to torrent it for me from like one of those Indian gambling like torrents. And so I watched it that way. So Connor's extremely dedicated to this podcast and I am not.
I think I'm extremely dedicated to what I will call the eschatology entrepreneurs, the doomsday prepper industry, and looking into that and finding out more about that. But Homestead was my entry point into this. So Homestead is, like I said earlier, Angel Studios Christian post-apocalyptic movie. The movie opens up on these two Filipino guys off the coast of LA talking about what are you going to do with the money at the end of all this. And well, it turns out they're not going to do anything because they've got a nuclear bomb on their boat that they launch off the coast of LA once
detonate the boat. We're not spoiling this because it literally happens in like what, the first minute and a half of the film.
Yeah,
I should say that. So I was really excited when I saw the trailer for Homestead because it looked like it was like a right-wing Christian take on like Civil War, like kind of like Alex Garland's thing, but from like a weird like maybe like Mormon prepper angle or something. And It's way less than that, and it's way less comprehensible than that would be, right? Like I imagine like a small movie where you're just thrown into, I don't know, some town in Kansas, right? And then, you know, they just, the power goes out or something, right? Like I'm imagining a movie that I would make, right? Which is they just get cut off from everything and like the town devolves, right? And then there's probably some Christian element, right? There has to be, right? There's crime or something like that. And that's kind of what happens in this, but it's so much more like suburbanized, mm-hmm. right? So the city that doesn't even, it's not even the city that gets blown up. LA, like a nuke goes off outside of LA. Obviously, like a bunch of people on the coast of California see like a mushroom cloud and like the power goes out, I guess, and stuff. And then all of American society is collapsing through like a series of montages. And we find out later that the plot contrivance is that there was a cyber attack and there might be other nukes going off. But like that's never shown.
No.
So it was extremely funny to me is that like instead of just not showing that and like having it be in the thing somewhere else, they choose to set off this nuke outside of a city. And it's like, well, I don't think anything actually got blown up. like I could see how that could trigger a panic, but like, you know what I mean?
It can. I mean, according to these doomsday scenarios that are you know, imagined by these prepper communities, the bomb goes off over the coast. It shoots a bunch of moisture up, and this moisture has fallout in it. It's now radiated. And so This is brought to light when one of the characters, after the bomb goes off, they get in their Tesla and type in some kind of weird button combination that says bioweapon mode activated. So apparently Elon Musk, created some bioweapon mode in a Tesla.
That is like a real thing, by the way, right? Like, I had to look that up and I was like, oh, that's so like fucking Elon Musk.
Wait, right? Really? There's a bioweapon mode in Teslas?
Supposedly there's like a really fine micron filter that you can turn on in your Tesla, supposedly like filters out like airborne pollutants, but the name for it in the Tesla is bioweapon defense mode, which is very funny.
Love it. You love to see it, folks.
I think it's, by the way, it's not available in the Cybertruck, so those guys just die when they which, you know what, hey, fair, man.
Oh well,
if you bought the Cybertruck, you deserve what's coming to you, dude.
So the whole plot, or the whole point of Act One, is these different families are rushing to a homestead in the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. You have the family in LA that is related to the owners of the homestead, that's revealed as time goes on. And then you have this guy, Jeff Erickson, who's like a former Green Beret. He's like a tough guy. Hey, listen, you better listen to me or get out the way, bozo. Like that kind of
By the way, he does the Batman voice like throughout the film. Like in some moments it's like he's literally doing like a joke impression of Christian Bale.
Yeah.
In the Nolan Batman movies.
His acting is, he made a choice. I'm not going to say he did a bad job, but he made a choice and he followed through with it, by God.
He's doing the apocalypse movie thing of like squinting off into the distance in most scenes.
So that's Ian Erickson, or Jeff Erickson, my mistake, Jeff Erickson. And so Jeff Erickson and his family, he's got, and I'm sorry, I have to point this out because it is relevant. He's a white man with a black wife, and he's got two biracial looking kids and one white kid, and it is a white daughter, and it is indicated that they have adopted this white daughter into their family, and she draws a lot, and it's hinted that her drawings are prophetic and that she may or may not have prophecy powers,
which is used in like two scenes in the movie.
Yeah. So they are heading to the Ross homestead, which is owned by Ian Ross, played by Neil McDonough. This is not Neil McDonough's first time being in an Angel Studios production. He played the devil in The Shift, and now he's back as the patriarch of the Ross family that owns the homestead. You know, basically the Erickson's are hauling ass all the way to the homestead. They encounter like some looters. They team up with a bunch of other Green Berets. It turns out that Ian Ross, Neil McDonough, has hired Jeff Erickson and his band of mercenaries to kind of be the backup plan when shit hits the fan of, all right, let's secure the homestead. Let's get everything ready. This homestead has been planning for the societal collapse, and they know who's coming? How many supplies do we have? What supplies do we need? How do we fortify this? So they're not like, it's not like The Walking Dead where society collapses and was like, what the hell do we do? These are people that are prepared. They immediately have food. They immediately have running water, lights, lots of coffee, which is, of course, Black Rifle Coffee Company. More on that later. Yeah, yeah. Featured very prominently throughout. There's some butting of heads, you know, like, Jeff Erickson is very rough and gruff, and Ian Ross is more, he's not a kinder guy, you know, like, so here's an example. When refugees come up to the gates of the homestead and they ask for supplies, Jeff Erickson basically tells them to fuck off. These are our supplies. You should have prepared better. Ian Ross tells them, I'm sorry, I can't help you, and then feels bad about it. So they both do the same thing, but one of them feels bad and the other doesn't.
I know that we're getting what we're paying for here with Homestead. This is an Angel Studios film, so we know it's going to have like plot holes or just like really basic stuff that doesn't make sense. But like the first thing for me is that basically the basic premise of this film and the ensuing television shows, Connor will talk about this later, but this is basically the pilot for a television show of the same name in the same universe. It's a continuation of the film. The basic premise is that there's this rancher guy. I assume he's a rancher. This man with the homestead. Okay, businessman, right? And he's got a big house and a bunch of land in Colorado. And he thinks that the world is going to end, or that there's going to be some event or happening or whatever, right? So he goes out of his way to make contact with, and I guess like hold in retainer, this other guy. What's his name?
Jeff Erickson. He's a DEA agent, yeah, which is not revealed until the TV show.
Oh God. So he holds in retainer this guy Erickson, or has some contact with him, who himself finds a bunch of, like, not guys from like his old squad in Iraq or whatever, right? But just like a smorgasbord of different like veteran type, right? Like operator style veterans. But in the film itself, the weird thing is, like, he's kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, he's waiting for society to return to normal. He keeps saying this over and over.
It's like FEMA will be here any day now.
We just have to hold out for the feds. And it's like, guys that think that the feds are coming don't hire, like, a troop of mercenaries to guard their property.
Yeah.
That's not like, I don't know. Again, I'm imagining a different movie when I imagine what this movie is going to be. But listener, like, don't tune out, because the thing that it is very interesting. It's almost entirely interesting because what Connor is going to elucidate in terms of the world, the media world that this film is a part of.
So Ross and Erickson butt heads over their different approaches to handling things. Erickson points out, like, hey, all your farmers don't have any combat training. There is a kind of a comedic scene where they play laser tag with each other to show, hey, you homesteaders are vastly unprepared for military experience. At which point Ian Ross says, well, you soldiers sure don't know how to farm. So there's a cultural exchange, some skill sharing right there. And so they each learn from each other. Later on down the line, the villain of the film is revealed. Alec, before you watch this movie, I want to know, could you guess who the antagonist of this movie was going to be?
I thought this was purely going to be like when you had described it, and I watched the trailer a couple times, and I was like, okay, so here's the two actors. I thought this was going to be solely this, like, degenerating relationship between Ian Ross, the, like, ranch guy, and Jeff Erickson, the operator guy, mm-hmm, right? But listener, no, we have to insert like a third villain, right? Because there has to be an element of like petty government tyranny.
Yes, the primary antagonist in this movie is the concept of dueling philosophies. The secondary antagonist in this film is a no-name government bureaucrat who, my favorite line of the entire film, he delivers my favorite
wait,
line.
Does he literally have no name?
He does have a name. Okay, it is,
I don't remember what it is.
his name is Blake Masterson. And he delivers my favorite line of the movie, which is, you can play dress up all you want, Mr. Ross, but there's still taxes to be paid.
I don't even, what is his title? He's like a tax collector, or he's not even the mayor. I kept calling when I was watching the film, like, I called Connor and I kept calling him the mayor. Connor's like, he's not the mayor. And
he's,
I was
not
like,
the mayor.
What is he? What's his job?
He's just like a city bureaucrat. And his whole motivation is he knows Ross has guns and supplies and he wants them. I think he works for, like, the Bureau of Land Management, like the city version of that. But he comes in and says, like, oh, you guys.
He's like a tax assessor.
Yeah, he's just like, this is an illegal.
I'm going to rule this town.
Kind of. Yeah. He says, like, this is an illegal gathering. You don't have a permit for all these people. You need to inventory all your food. Basically, like, give me a list of all your supplies so I can take them. Mm-hmm. And they basically tell him, like, screw you, G-man. Get off of our land. He's the bad guy. He shows up again at the very, very end in a much needed gun battle that is kind of cool.
Yeah, this is like a couple cool scenes in the film.
Yeah.
A couple. At the beginning and at the very end, there's some fun scenes. Yeah.
And there's also a plot point of a teenage rom-com kind of thing where Ross's daughter and Erickson's stepson kind of fall in love because they're the only teenagers around. And, you know, that's how it happens in the apocalypse. It's who you know, not who you love. So we get to watch them fall in love. It's really quirky. Abe, the stepson of Erickson, he's trying to prove himself. And after a fight between Erickson and his wife, he puts Abe on guard duty. Abe shoots an innocent hunter and freaks the fuck out about it. And that's
his father tells him to on a walkie-talkie, by the way.
Yeah, he's like, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him.
The hilarious scene of the hunter just like using his scope to try and figure something out, and then just standing there and being like, I can't see anything, as he like points a rifle. They're like shooting warning shots at him. He's like, I still can't see nothing.
They shoot a warning shot and he's just like, they shoot a warning shot and the hunter's like, you think he got something?
It's crazy. I mean, it's just like, they're like, anyway.
It makes zero sense at all. And Abe killed the guy and he has to deal with that. And it is through interacting with Ross's daughter that he is able to kind of get over it a little bit and become more of a human being. So there's that human element, but it does not gel with the rest of the tone of the film. So I thought
it's very off,
very, very off.
I should say the romance stuff like doesn't gel with the drama, right? Like, like there's two main points of drama in the film, those being the kind of the conflict that becomes a non-conflict between Ian Ross and Jeff Erickson, and then like the extremely human conflict of all of these people from the like nearby town, is my guess, right, that are like approaching the home and begging for food because they're starving, and then like inserting this like oddly, I guess, Christian themed kind of mini romance aspect feels so out of place.
Yeah.
I mean, like if you've heard us talk about Angel Studios movies, one thing we mention a lot is that like tonally they're really wild. And this is no different than most, right?
Yeah. This is like, if you watch Sound of Freedom, my favorite line of that movie is, you made one mistake, never trust a pedophile.
Yeah, no.
Like that's the kind of like balls to the wall, what the fuck did I just watch kind of vibe that we got from this movie.
They should have had pedophiles on the homestead.
No.
Who's the homestead pedophile? We've hired a team of pedophiles.
White hat pedophiles. It's like Dexter. And they're like, we're going to find the bad guys. We don't act on our impulses.
So we can find all the Hollywood sickos.
So the dueling philosophies that are going on between Erickson and Ross do have like multiple situations where they kind of come to a head, and these weird Christian things. So Alec, what you said about this weird Christian element to it, the second time I saw this, I saw it with my buddy, shout out Connor, that is his name. He and I went to go see this, and he... he's a devout Catholic, genuinely engages in Christian media and like likes it, and we talk about it, and he felt that the Christianity of this movie was shoehorned in. Like, this felt like,
it really feels like that.
Yeah, it's like this felt like they needed to make it Christian in order to get funding for it. Definitely more on that later, because the books are not Christian. But an extra stress factor on Erickson and Ross's competitiveness is Ross's wife, Jenna, wants to let everybody into the homestead, wants to open the gates, let all the refugees in, give
the bleeding hard ass lib wife who wants to feed all the townspeople instead of murdering them.
Yeah.
Big mistake, lady.
Oh, my gosh. She's really going to destroy the homestead with this love and caring crap.
I have to. Because we keep saying the word homestead and it like infuriates me. So when we say homestead, you might be imagining Little House on the Prairie or something, right? What we have is a large suburban McMansion that's on a hill with a bunch of surrounding land. That is the quote unquote homestead. And I guess it's got like a small orchard and they can grow like crops and there's some greenhouses there, right? But one, this is not like a fortress city, right, built into the mountains of Wyoming or something like that. It's just a big giant house on a hill, presumably that one of the producers owns of this film that they were allowed to film on.
Yes. So this homestead, this giant property is owned by Jason Ross, who is one of the authors of Black Autumn, which is the book that Homestead is based on. I promise you, I'll get more into how weird that is, because I'm sure the keen listener to this podcast said, wait, the character Ian Ross, and there's an author named Jason Ross? Yes, you are right to notice that connection. So moving along, the one last thing I'll say about this movie is that there's one refugee at the gate that knows Ian Ross, grew up, you know, hung out with him at the very least a couple times before, and did not make the cut to be invited into the homestead.
Yeah, brutal.
And begging like, please, please, please. And he's like, I got skills, I can help. And Ian goes, listen, man, you install fireplaces for a living. not a skill we need. However, Ian Ross, who, spoiler alert, he gets shot in the stomach by Blake Masterson, the government villain, and he's in a coma for the end of the movie. And while he's in a coma, his wife's like, well, I'm opening the gates, I'm letting all the refugees in. Turns out the guy who installs fireplaces, he installed a fireplace in the greenhouse so we can make bread, and it keeps the greenhouse warm enough over the winter that it actually enables us to grow plants even when we shouldn't be. So it's kind of a deus ex machina that is backed by this homestead science, I guess.
Yeah, like, a better term. Like, by the way, in one of like the only scenes that I found interesting, because I was like, oh shit, show me like interesting ways that you could architecturally design a grow house to like combine, right, like to combine different features of like a post-apocalyptic living that like complement each other. But it's just like a 30-second like montage, right? Where the rest of the film's drawn out with like, you know, like these terrible like star-crossed lover crap, right?
And that's about all that we really have to say about the movie. I can tell you that the TV show that is, I mean, the movie ends and it says the end is just the beginning. And then it's a trailer. Then it's a trailer for the Homestead series, which there's only two episodes available on Angel Studios right now. The third one is yet to enter production because we need more Angel Guild members to sign up. I don't have a referral code. It is $20 a month. Please sign up so I can watch.
We need to get sponsored by Angel Studios. Yeah. Just like hating everything we see from them.
And what's so funny is that Neil McDonough probably only got paid to be in the movie, because he wakes up from his coma at the end of the movie. And at the beginning of the first episode of the TV show, he's back in his coma and you don't even see his body. And so it's like, all right, we could not afford for Neil McDonough to come back. Obviously, I don't even know.
Given that, I don't know what the point of having him waking up from the coma is. Like, literally, like, it's just to tell him that, like, hey, by the way, you were fucking wrong, and it's good to help people, right? Which, like, hey, fair enough, right? Like, within the context of your show, right? Like, you've solved all your problems because montage, right? But it doesn't serve you narratively at all. Like,
I mean,
and then off screen, Grandpa died.
It's also like the show kind of hard resets for everything. So Neil McDonough's back in a coma. Abe and Claire, which is the daughter of the Ross family, they're on the rock. So their relationship is having trouble and they have to fall back in love again. And it turns out that Jenna is having a hard time running the homestead without Ian, and they're running out of supplies. It's not really made clear. So they bring in Ian's brother. They call him and he flies in by helicopter. Alec, can you guess the name of Ian Ross's brother in this show?
Bean Ross.
Close. More biblically, it's Cain.
It's Cain. Oh, it's of course. How could I not get that?
It's Cain. So that's the show.
I wonder if he'll be secretly evil.
Well, he does inject some chemicals into Ian's IV bag. So yeah, he's planning on killing his brother. And
delicious morphine.
Anytime he sees his wife, he's like the apocalypse looks good on you, and he's like only talks to her when he has a shirt off, which is like kind of scandalous for Angel Studios. But yeah, he's coveting his brother's wife.
I might be watching this after all.
Well, Alec, actually, what you should watch, given that you had an interest in the scene with the Deus Ex Machina survivalist science, there's a reality TV show hosted by Jason Ross, the author of Black Autumn, that kicked off the series, where he shows like, hey, this is how we make salsa on our homestead. I went to Africa to see other homesteaders. They're not homesteaders. They just like don't have power. Like they're not rejecting the government or fearing societal collapse. He just like went to a poor community. He's like, oh, so you guys are like homesteaders like me.
Oh, huh? Cool. So you guys have some stuff. Let's hang out.
I have to say that show actually way more interesting. They show you like this is how we do things. This is how we use terracotta water jars to like water our plants just in case we lose water pressure. Like it's very fascinating stuff.
I think I'm just gonna watch some more of those like Chinese LARPer videos on Xiaohongshu.
That's probably a better use of your time because the end of every single episode of the or at least the two episodes I watch of this homestead reality TV show, it ends with testimonials from mostly white people saying like, yeah, I think our country's headed for a tough time. I think we're on the verge of collapse.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like, I don't know, like survivors of natural disasters or something. It's just guys being like, yeah, it's definitely all coming down.
Yeah. I mean, when you read between the lines for a lot of these people, it's like, it's not as good as it used to be being white and all. So, yeah, I'm a doomsday prepper now.
It's definitely coming. I heard a guy didn't get hired at Boeing because he was white.
Yeah.
Google, I don't know.
Yeah, I googled white erasure and now I
white nothing. Genocide.
Yeah, kind of like, oh, this is white.
I heard they're genociding us.
Yeah, I heard they're committing white genocide, so now I have a chicken coop and I raise my own eggs. So fucking
oh
stupid.
Oh my god.
But there's something here, right? So the book.
Wait, what?
So oh, there's actually something there with these white people talking about why they're homesteading, right? So the movie has a biracial couple in it. It has Christian elements. It ends with the government coming to take everyone's supplies and there's a big shootout. And what saves the day is Christian messages.
Why do you keep mentioning the biracial couple?
Well, because the book ends with a fucking race war. Okay, so the book has a lot of, it's not just about this homestead. It's a lot of vignettes about people interacting with each other during this apocalyptic event, but they're all
the first book is called Black Autumn, but there's a series of books, right?
Right, yes. And this first book, I've only read the first book, so I can't speak about anything else, but all the characters in the book are affected by or making their way to the homestead, or they want supplies on the homestead. So like the hunter that's killed in the movie, he's actually like a recurring character in the book and you get to see his motivation. He's a suburban dad who, you know, has put on some pounds. He doesn't feel like himself anymore. His wife is nagging him all the time. Real quick, anytime
his
a woman is
small. Yeah, totally unrelatable.
Anytime a woman is mentioned in this book, it is like they're nagging them. I believe at one point they even say like, why don't you quit being a bitch and get out of my way? It's just like, okay, all right, here we go.
So this is a book for cool guys, for incredibly cool guys with normal relationships with women.
But this hunter, he, you know, the suburb dad who starts like, well, I have to kill a deer. And everyone's like, but what about the hunting warden? Or what about the game warden? Isn't your hunting license expired? And he's like, well, I got to do it. I got to kill
Isn't
a deer.
The world over? I don't understand.
Well, that's the other thing. It's like everyone keeps thinking like, is everything going to be all right? Or is everything going to work out? Anyway, so one group that is talked about a lot in this is a bunch of Mexican quote unquote gangbangers who busted out of prison and they're heading to the homestead to kill white people. Straight up.
Wait, explicitly?
Explicitly. They want to kill white people. So the Mexicans end up getting into a little bit of a turf war with the Polynesians. And how do they make peace with the Polynesians?
Is this in Colorado?
And how do they make peace with the Polynesians? By promising them, we're going to go kill some whites together. And the Polynesians say, well, okay, then. They've taken our sauce and given it to Chick-fil-A. It's time for us to get it back.
She swallowed a spider to catch the fly. I don't know why she swallowed a fly.
So the Polynesians and the Mexicans team up and there's like over 2,000 of them against 200 homesteaders and the homesteaders win.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Because they're all Green Beret trained.
Sounds.
It's a literal race war where the Mexicans and the Polynesians are like, we're doing this to kill white people.
Yeah. We like, want to kill gringo pendejos.
Yeah. Basically, that is something they say.
Hello, my name is
Hello, my name is Juan Carlos. I would like
Juan Carlos
gringo pendejos.
I need to murder some güeros. So, I'm here to murder güeros.
Yeah, I'm here to I came here to chew gum and kill güeros, and I'm all out of gum.
Yeah. I've come to reclaim Colorado.
Yeah, I believe that the movie played up the biracial couple to distance itself from how the first book ends, because I do know that the second book in the Black Autumn series doesn't take place in Colorado. It takes place on a different community in Texas that is having to fend off an invasion from Mexico by cartels.
I imagine like the screenplay and casting call where the guy's just like nervously tapping on his desk going like, I'm not racist. This is not a racist movie. We're not racist.
Yeah, that's why they changed it up. I mean, this biracial couple is the only non-white people in the movie. And the book.
Yeah, that's true.
The book does not have non-white people on the homestead.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I think they would make that clear. So lurking beneath the surface of all this survivalist doomsday prepper stuff is racial supremacy.
Normal American tendencies.
There you go. So let's get into Black Autumn a little bit. Black Autumn, this whole series is written by Jeff Kirkham, Jeff Erickson, and Jason Roth, Ian Roth. Yes. This would be like
so if, lazy.
this would be as if Alec and I wrote a book about two cool podcasters who have a lot of sex, but they have to turn it away because they love their significant others so much.
True.
Jesus Christ. It's so cringe. It's so cringe. But here's the other thing. The movie changes the names up a little bit. And the book, it's straight up Jeff Kirkham and Jason Roth. They just put the
they don't even change their names.
Yeah, they just they're like, yeah, that's us. That's us. We're just like in it. Dumb stuff.
Wait, Jeff Kirkham is the guy that looks that's the fucking operator dude, right?
Yeah. You know, just in case he listens to this, I'm not going to comment on his physical appearance.
But fuck Jeff Kirkham.
You said it, so, not me.
Jeff Kirkham is a bald goatee operator guy. He's one of these like bear shaped but fat like dudes who loves to fucking wear like attack vest and shit and like go shooting. He's super fucking tough guy on the Black Rifle Coffee fucking podcast. This shit is extremely cringe. But this guy has enough like operator cred to where when he writes a cringe book about, you know,
yeah,
barely shrouded like American dystopianism that culminates in race war. What a shocker, right? Like people will buy it.
I mean, the real Jeff Kirkham, you know, he saw combat in the Middle East and Africa. He has set up warlords in Afghanistan. So, you know, he's
good for him.
Yeah, I know. Right?
Enjoy.
Ask him how he feels about Bukabazi and we'll see. How that yeah. goes. So, but one thing I kind of want to touch on here is this racial element to the book. It's kind of steeped. It's not even kind of. It's straight up steeped in ignorance, because within America, there are survivalist communities that aren't white. There is a strong, vibrant Black survivalist community that is, you know, based around foraging, knowing the land, building off the land, living off the land. Mutual aid, caring about each other. There's a whole other aspect. It's not just like the government's going to collapse, we need to be prepared. We can really only count on ourselves. And there's some beauty in other survivalist communities, intentional communities, whatever you want to call them. But I did some research on survivalists around the world. And Alec, I don't think it would surprise you to learn that this is a pretty American thing. Like in Europe and in China, at least where I've looked, they're just like, yeah, we buy a lot of canned goods in case the market's shut down again after COVID. And there's actually a survivalist community in Africa and South Africa. And it's some white people that are afraid of civil war.
There's still some hanging out in Zimbabwe, as I understand it, as well. Yeah, I mean, America does. One of the things that's like unique about America is a seeming obsession with the end of America, which a lot of people tend to fetishize in addition to other things.
Absolutely. Something that's common in both the book and the movie is that if something happens to America, the whole fucking world's going to fall apart. It's American exceptionalism. It's the idea that the entire world cannot survive without this shining city on a hill.
Well, and that, like, if they do, it's not worth talking about, right? Like, the right. world's about us, and the apocalypse is about our society falling apart, and the kind of usually, right, like, the kind of people that are serious enough and full of, like, hard truths to capture and rebuild either America or usually, like, some just, like, dystopian nightmare town, right?
Yeah. So throughout the book, there is a radio broadcast that is included in the movie as well. But there's this radio broadcaster. Every chapter opens up with an update from him on what's going on in the world. I don't know how he has world knowledge. I don't know how. Yeah. He has internet access.
He still has Reuters on his phone.
I mean, dude, the phones still fucking work in the book.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they apparently cell towers have enough power to last the plot of the book. So this radio guy, he keeps everybody posted on a dirty bomb went off over Saudi Arabia that the Iranians set up. And wouldn't you know it? The entirety of Europe has fallen to ISIS cells that came from Germany. I had no clue how they got into Germany. So around the time this is published, this is during the European Syrian refugee crisis, which, look, this guy is saying, like, Muslims, non-white Europeans have taken over Europe. There's racial elements to all of this stuff.
Yeah, that's all the problem with Homestead coming out in 2024, because as we know, Europe has been conquered by by ISIS style Muslimic fucking.
Yeah, it's really silly. He just frequently talks about how, like, all the cities that are burning, all the cities that have fallen, everything's shot to shit. So we get some updates.
It almost gives you the feeling that they want this to happen, like, really badly.
Yes, abso-fucking-lutely. They really, really want this to happen. And I think we've talked about this on other episodes in the past, but what these people want is for the world to collapse so they can rebuild it in their own image, where they are king and they get to fuck your wife if they want to.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's that. I think they want to, like, just fantasize about killing other people, right? Like,
yeah.
It's just an outlet for the kind of alienation that like American capitalism makes, right? Like, I don't know if I'm saying anything unique here, but I wonder, right, like, with how much of these kinds of movies are devoted to the actual science of agriculture that this kind of homesteading would be. Nobody's interested in that shit, right? I mean, except for me, right? Like, I'm one of those people that's watching, like, I turned this reclaimed land into a rice paddy, like, from some Vietnamese guy right on YouTube. I watched that shit already. I don't need fucking Homestead for that. But I don't think these audiences want that. They want, like, they want the spectacle of the apocalypse, and then they want to feel as though they're part of the in-group that's going to survive. That's the point of these movies.
So I mentioned the thing about coveting, you know, sleeping with someone's wife if they want to. It's because of the way they also write about women in this book is very, like, they talk about, like, their physicality. Dude, the way that they write about Jeff Ross's daughter is very strange.
Huh.
Talking about, like, she's good looking on the eyes. Like, dude, come on, that's your kid. Like, what are you?
A lot of psychology going on.
Yeah, it's like it's like he's pimping out his daughter in this fictitious world. Mm. It's very odd. And Alec, I would really be curious to get your take on this first book at the very least, because it's over 400 pages and it's not just fluff. Like, it is military drills. It is talking about, like, this is how we set up our garden. This is how we're going to hunt. This is how we're going to, you know, generate revenue once the society gets rebuilt. They're kind of, you can tell that these two authors, Kirkham and Roth, sat back, probably had whiskey and cigars, and just spitballed scenarios. Like, it's, this is, I mean, contingency, that's fine. Planning at, this is contingency fiction. That's what this is.
That's like fine and probably really fun to do, right? It's not like I haven't engaged in that kind of shit, right? Like, at you know, in friendly conversation or, like, at a campfire or something, and, like, theorized if you could set up a homestead, right? Like, a farm, right? Like, what would the important parts of that be? The problem for me is I think like, again, right, if I were to make this movie, if you're to show the outcome of societal breakdown, that's titillating and interesting, and you can tell an interesting story there. If you're to show a post-apocalyptic society, that could be fun and titillating. But again, like, what's his fucking name? Kirkman? Jeff Kirkham?
Kirkham. Ironically enough, Jeff Kirkman is the guy that
Jeff Kirkland brand jeans.
Well, Kirkman is the guy who created The Walking Dead, so it's very easy.
That's why. Yeah, okay.
Kirkham did Black Autumn.
So the problem is that, like, for a guy like Jeff Kirkham, I think if he was honest about who he would be, he's running Bartertown. He is on the veranda of a fucking plantation home in this scenario. That's realistically where. I mean, if he's honest and smart, right, that's where he would see himself being. He's not hoofing it in the fucking fields, dog.
No.
You don't become a tier one operator or whatever. So what? You can share crop? No, dog. No, he's not going to be a shepherd, right? He's not going to be a fucking, he's not going to be tilling the soil in front of a fucking ox. He's going to be having somebody do that for him, right? Somebody who's lower on the fucking totem pole than he is.
Yeah. Now, let's get a little bit into Ross and Kirkham and the people surrounding this franchise. So Jason Ross, he is an entrepreneur. That's basically all I could find on him. He just has money. From what I understand, I'm postulating here, but I believe that he is a former Mormon. What do they call them again?
I think it's called Jack Mormon.
Oh yeah, Jack Mormon. So I believe
they're called Jack Mormons. Yeah.
Yeah. I believe Jason Ross is a Jack Mormon. Based on the fact that the characters in the book, his family are like still in the Mormon church. So that's my guess. But Jeff Kirkham is a former Green Beret, Special Forces in the Army. He makes a living in America thanks to one of his companies called Ready Man, which just trains people to survive. Like, you know, basically, like, I'm going to teach you survivalist skills. I'm going to teach you how to shoot a gun. I'm going to teach you how to be prepared in case society collapses. And Jason Ross, he's an entrepreneur with his finger in many, many pies, but he also invested a ton of money into his homestead and running military drills and running survivalist drills on his homestead, on his huge property. So these people are part of a extended universe of survivalist businessmen. At the very, very end of the book and the epilogue, the characters are complaining about how they don't have any more coffee. They've run out of coffee. And then one character named Evan finds a bag of coffee, raw coffee beans. And he's in Colorado. He finds raw coffee beans. And he says, like, dude, I think I got 10,000 pounds of coffee. And they say, when things calm down, we'll figure out pricing and distribution. What do we call this thing? Oh, and God. Evan says, well, considering the circumstances, I think we should call it Black Rifle Coffee Company.
Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Oh, God. That's so cringe, man.
This character, Evan, is based off of Evan Hafer, who is the founder of Black Rifle Coffee Company. He's also a Green Beret. All these people are like former Green Berets, former Special Forces. I believe there might be a Navy SEAL in there. You know, there are three characters that are on the board of Black Rifle Coffee Company that are in this book. So there's also Tom Davin, who's a co-CEO of BRCC, and he's a former Panda Express CEO and former CEO of, I think, the Taco Bell Group. It's not Yum Brands. It was whoever owned Taco Bell before Yum Brands acquired it. And then there's Matt Best, another co-founder, and they all have characters named after them in this book. There's also on the board of and one of the co-founders of BRCC is this guy, Jared J.T. Taylor, who's an Air Force veteran, and he co-hosts a podcast called Drinkin' Time, which is a comedic right-wing cultural affairs podcast that promotes Hard AF Seltzer, which is a hard seltzer.
Hard AF Seltzer, which is a hard seltzer
that J.T. owns. Now, each chapter of this book, like I said, is opened up by a radio broadcast by a man named J.T. Taylor, who frequently mentioned drinking bros. So if Alec and I wrote a book about ourselves, this book, the parallel, would also have Bernie Goldsmith.
Yeah,
it would have Rahul Rao. It would have Amr in it. It would have Maya in it.
Our buddy Nate. All the stars are here.
Yeah, and like, as sweet as it is to write a book that's like, when the society collapses, me and all my friends are going to survive somehow, it's also corny as hell. It's just like, they dropped that line about Black Rifle Coffee Company, like Nick Fury showing up at the end of Iron Man to mention the Avengers Initiative. Like, it's so corny. And it just like sets up, like, look, in the movie, there's a lot of Black Rifle Coffee Company merch. Like the mugs are prominently turned toward the camera.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Tipped with a crooked wrist so you can see the logo. It's featured on a lot of stuff. The Tuttle Twins, which is a libertarian television program on Angel Studios, is featured in the movie as well. And look, Black Rifle Coffee Company, for those who don't know, they are based in Texas, I believe Austin, Texas. They're a coffee company that is very patriotic, and they're veteran owned, veteran operated.
But they're part of the operator subculture, right? Yeah. Like all of those, like I guess I'd even say like Rogan adjacent, although he's kind of gotten away from that.
I mean,
like
Evan Hafer went on Joe Rogan in November. So like,
He's been on recently. See, yeah. I don't even pay attention to Rogan because it sucks so bad now.
Now,
but like, yeah, all of these guys are in like the manosphere.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're the operators of the manosphere, right?
And they've got good and bad. The bad, I'll say, is that when Starbucks, during the first Trump administration, when Starbucks announced in response to the Muslim ban and Trump's immigration policies that they would hire 10,000 refugees, BRCC said in response to that, well, we're going to hire 10,000 vets, which that's all well and good, but don't hire veterans out of spite. Like, hire them because you want veterans to have jobs, not because you want to stick it to Howard Schultz at Starbucks. What the fuck
Mass
is wrong with you?
Mass suicides at Black Rifle Coffee Company.
Yeah.
Every Black Rifle Coffee office has been shot up, has been exploded.
Well,
topical, folks.
Now, the good that BRCC has done, and I kind of really respect Evan Hafer for making this a goal of his, is that he wants, and in his vision for the company, is that BRCC will have just as many locations as Starbucks, but they will be franchised and owned by veterans, because he wants, in his world, he says, I want to see more veterans owning these coffee shops instead of becoming police officers. Because,
I mean, that's, dude, fair a police, enough,
yeah,
guess.
A like, veteran, dude, a veteran police officer, you're giving a guy with PTSD a gun, and like, you're just creating a cycle of violence. And at least Hafer is trying to get them out of that cycle.
He's just like, I want them to be, you know, petite bourgeois, like restaurant guys. Like, that's probably better than being cops, but like, the bar is pretty low here. I mean, I guess the bar is set at being a cop, which is, I mean, income wise and outcome wise, like, pretty fucking low, right?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, maybe you get like a free Spotify subscription or something if you work at BRCC. I know when I worked at Starbucks, I got a free Spotify subscription.
Wait, so if you remember all the like a Starbucks music that was like all like next to the cash register at like Starbucks, all the like Nora Jones and stuff. What's it, a Black Rifle Coffee Company Starbucks?
Oh,
was it a veteran themed Starbucks?
Brad Paisley.
No, you're right. It's just like
or that Canadian rapper who loves Donald Trump. What's his name?
Oh, I was thinking the Florida guy with like all the tattoos on his face.
Oh, Jelly Roll.
Yeah. It's probably just like neo country.
It's also like, who fucking knows, man? Like, Paul Ryan's favorite band was Rage Against the Machine. It could be.
Paul Ryan.
Yeah, the bottom fell out on this stuff, man.
Yeah, that's
culture
true.
Doesn't belong to culture doesn't belong to left and right anymore. It's like,
it's just a bunch of one track shaboozy CDs. It's got the one song 18 times on it. Hey, that fucking song slaps. If we put it on the show, do you think we get do you think we get instantly banned from Apple Podcasts? I'm sure we would.
Oh, I have no idea, because it's so popular and it's so new.
No, yeah. It's the number. I think it's like the number one song on Spotify.
Well,
all right. Anyway,
but some other things that we encountered, or I encountered when doing some more research into this doomsday industry. So after I saw the movie, I went out to the lobby because Alec bailed on me and I didn't have anyone to talk about the movie with. So I just found some people that went. And by the way, my theater was packed.
Really?
It was completely packed.
Is this at the pre-screening or is this at the first screening? Okay.
The time I went to go see it again with my buddy, we were the only people in the theater and we talked the whole time, which was great. But the first time the theater...
Well, everybody else that had seen it was already on a homestead, so...
Yep, that's right. That's right. The first time, the theater was completely packed, and it was like families, because it's a family-friendly movie-ish, and it was lots of families and couples, and so I approached these two couples that were on like a double date, older, and I asked them, hey, what'd you think? And wouldn't you know it, Alec, I lucked the fuck out. One of the women... read every single book.
Hell yes.
And so she was telling me like the differences and what inspired it and where they changed and what she liked, what she didn't. And then I asked her husband what he thought. He's like, I thought they put 10 pounds in a 5 pound bag. It's like, yeah, that's about right. But the more I talked to her, eventually she started to tell me that she reads these books because she wants to be prepared for an event. And she has invested her money into a survivalist community that's like a doomsday timeshare in Texas. If shit hits the fan, she has already secured herself a spot in one of these doomsday survivalist places. And let me go ahead and pull up.
Wait. So these people actually believe that if they pay money and the world ends, they're going to be able to honor what, like a receipt that they printed off the internet that says, oh yeah, there's I just arrived here. There should be a cabin and a bunch of food for the next year for me. The world is over, lady. They're going to fucking pop you. What are you talking about? Or are they going to tell you to fuck off?
Oh my fucking God. Oh my fucking God, Alec. I have to send this to you.
What?
Holy shit. Angel Studios read my Substack.
What?
Look at that. Look at that.
Homestead TV series posts. No fucking way. Dude, you're one of the only people talking about this movie online. Oh no. They did at Dwick on Substack.
I will be shamelessly devouring the series.
Oh, rules.
This is the second time I've gone viral on the internet for reasons I did not want.
Oh, no.
Wow.
Neil McDonough delivers an aggravatingly good performance. Why did they put the full thing in there? They could just lie and not say that. they didn't link to the Substack. Of course they didn't.
No.
Wait, how did you just find this?
Because I tried to, I don't remember my Substack link, and so I looked up Substack Dwicka, and wow, they quoted me.
This rules. This is on the main post. There's a 400 comments on this bitch.
I need a second. Why didn't they link to my Substack?
It pays to write. I don't know, Connor. Why didn't they link to your Substack?
I'm like crying, man. This sucks.
This rules.
Why does this shit keep happening to me?
When you Google Dwicka Substack, it's the first reply before your post. Oh, wait, your post isn't even on here. There's somebody called at Dwina. It auto-corrected to at Dwina's Substack. Dwina? This is some fucking Dwina Murphy Gibb? Some old lady.
Why does this shit keep fucking happening to me, man?
I don't know, man. You're cursed. See, this is why I'm anonymous on the internet, except for this fucking podcast. Robin Gibbs' wife, film producer. All right, this is a really long rabbit hole. I'm sorry, Connor.
Okay, well, listeners got to hear
whatever. Whatever, fuck it, man.
So these fucking post-apocalyptic timeshares like Fortitude Ranch or Terra Vivos, you can buy a fucking... Oh, I can't believe this.
That's really fucking funny, man.
I'm so fucking mad right now. Why didn't they just quoted me and didn't...
Oh. Yeah, they're not going to link to your fucking Substack that shits all over their movie, man.
I don't shit all over the movie. My fiance said that I was too kind to the movie.
That's extremely funny, man. That's so funny. While this movie is by no means good, it's not a total flop. I don't know if I'd say this is a fucking glowing review, my man. This is pretty bad for them.
Hang on.
It is a good review. We should link to it in the fucking.
Yeah, we'll link to it. We'll do what Homestead could not do. It's such a fuck. They're doing this to piss me off because they're like, fuck you. We're going to make it look like you love it.
That's really funny. Dude, if somehow they could find the clip of you like discovering this, they'd be like, yeah, bitch, got him. Fucking got his ass.
I hope we keep all this in. This is too funny.
I'll probably put it at the end.
But yeah, look, there are these survivalist communities such as Fortitude Ranch or Vivos X Point, where you're Terra Vivos, where you can look at membership info and pricing. For like $14,000 down, you can secure yourself a little apartment for you and your family in case something happens.
Do these people actually believe that they're going to get this?
Yeah, dude. Why else would they put money down?
That's insane, dude.
If you didn't believe it, you might as well just be a weekend warrior who like does escape the city drills. Once you are like, no, I'm putting aside $14,000 into this.
These people are getting scammed, bro. They're getting scammed. Of course
they're getting scammed. And that's why, as I say in my Substack piece, is like, I don't really judge the people that are buying into this stuff, but I do judge the people that are selling it. Like, they have convinced through this movie, through this book, through the company that Kirkham and Ross are affiliated with, they have created an environment and an industry completely based on getting you to be afraid of a hypothetical scenario and then promising you the cure or the way to prepare for that hypothetical scenario. Yeah.
I mean, it's almost cliche at this point for like a leftist to say the thing about like, you know, marketing solves the problem that it creates, right? Like capitalism solves all the problems that marketing creates, right? Like the marketing is like a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? But this is literally that, where it's like this scary thing is definitely going to happen and you should prepare with our product. It's so naked.
Yeah. And, you know, they offer classes, do they really believe in it? I don't know, but they're probably seeing dollar signs. It makes me wonder what happened to the people that were selling all the nuclear fallout shelters or the bomb shelters in the 50s and 60s. What happened to them?
I bet you that they actually do believe it. I don't know if they think that, if they honestly think that, like, you know, Houston mother of three, 52, right, is going to survive the fucking coming, you know, a race war apocalypse because she took a class, you know, from Jeff Kirkham or whoever the fuck, right? But like, on some level, they probably do think that these skills are useful, and they probably do believe an apocalypse is coming and that they are definitely going to survive, right?
Yeah. Another thing I want to point out about these books and movies is the time scale of all of them. So like, the movie takes place over the course of 20 days. The book, I believe, is like a week. So within just a few days, like, we're already at the point where we're pulling guns on cops and like, man, we're shooting each other. And like, I think they really are
prepared.
We've talked about this before. The reason why I think this shit is so hokey is like, look, we live in areas that are routinely affected by natural disasters at least once a year. And we work together. Houston comes together for each other. It's not immediately like lock the doors and grab your guns. It's okay, let's figure this out. We'll get through it. Of course, we do have that faith that Ross has in the movie of like, the government's going to come and fix stuff. Like, the food's going to be delivered.
We're not going to starve to death, right?
Right. So the difference between us and them is that we have faith that this faceless bureaucracy will keep going. So here's the thing that's mentioned in the Homestead reality show, is that they're saying, we learned a lot of lessons through COVID that we need to be prepared. The lesson that I learned from COVID is that we're gonna keep the lights on. Like, we had the world changing event that brought everything to a halt and people just kept going to work.
And by the way, right, like that the system, given this like possible absolutely world ending crisis, was like, how do we get people back to Applebee's, right? like that we'll just run it into the fucking ground. And that within some like Like, I, you know, I've been through a fucking Cat 5 hurricane, right? Like, the town got all destroyed. But that's, for us, that's, like, pretty routine. When it comes time for the fucking end of the world, right, if that's coming, I think we'll basically be in some degree of denial about it up until the point where, like, there is no return. And, like, if you want to prepare, you know, your life for that, fine. You know, tangent but related, my plan for the apocalypse is a fucking bullet, okay? I'm not living in a world where my fucking phone doesn't work. I don't want to. I'm not going back to being a peasant, okay?
If
don't
want to do it. If I can't get on Xiaohongshu, I'm shooting myself in the fucking head.
Because guess what? China's been preparing for this, and they're still posting. And if I can't see those posts, I'm out. I'm dead. Seppuku. Of getting out my special sword, and I'm finally doing what I should have done years ago. Okay.
You're all just right. Like, oh my God, I can't fucking do it.
I can't okay. fucking do
oh
it.
Oh my God, I can't do it.
Do it.
All right. So you said you had some points you wanted to bring up.
Okay. So first off, right, like we mentioned already that this is, I think, like more a thing that people play with in their brains. This is like purely fantasy. Right. Everybody knows this that watches these, that these people that are like preparing for this and theoretically like very frightened of this. For some of them, it's because, you know, like Jeff of Kirkland brand jeans or whatever the fuck his name is. Right. For all these operator freaks, it's because they're selling classes or coffee or whatever, like bullshit that like a Rogan audience will buy because they like know how to operate a fucking firearm. For some of those, that's the motivator. And for others, like they're just fucking disaffected with the United States, right? It can be religious. It's oftentimes racial, right? Sometimes it's just straight up political. Sometimes it's kind of like ideological, like with the kind of libertarian crowds that just like dream of, you know, a return to a truly free market where most of us, I guess, are engaged in subsistence agriculture. Like there's a lot of different kinds of motivations for this kind of stuff, but we should not kid ourselves about the fact that these people all want this to happen, right? Which actively for me kind of takes some of the wind out of the sails of actually creating like compelling fiction, right? Like if there's one thing that we've learned, Connor, about Angel Studios is that them portraying stuff that they think is unequivocally good is always in the way of them making good media, right? Because I think some of the best media, and by the way, some of the best media about like apocalypses and civil wars and that kind of stuff are generally people who don't want that kind of stuff to happen, right? Like I generally describe this stuff as like misery porn, right? Like I think of It Comes at Night, right? Which is like a fun little flick from a couple years back. It's a great minimalist kind of post-apocalyptic kind of, you know, in the vein of COVID-esque film. But it is misery porn, right? Like this has destroyed these people to the point where like they're kind of inhuman, right? There's nothing to be gained from this, but it's a really good movie and it did really well. And it has some kind of like staying power, the kind that I don't think Homestead's going to have, right? So that's just like a media critique.
To your point, Alec, about the people wanting this to happen, you're 100% correct because they warn you, they get you so worried that you buy their classes, that you invest in their timeshares, but they want it to happen because if they didn't, they would try to improve society somewhat. Instead of waiting for the apocalypse to come, they would be more proactive in trying to prevent an apocalypse.
I really do think that, like, I've been thinking about Homestead a lot since I watched it on that, like, bootleg camera fucking thing that Connor uploaded for me. So, like, I think at this point, like, by the way, to the episode that we just recorded with Bernie, like last week, right, like, I really do think that a bunch of Americans at this point are just kind of over America, that like everyone wants America to end in some way, like, except for, like, the liberals who are coming to grips with the fact that, like, it's probably just over and they have to like put it to bed. But like, I don't know. Like I look at like the, you know, the MAGA crowd and these people kind of all see the writing on the wall, right? Like they're all basically done with the version of America, at least that like the past 30 or 40 or 50 years have created, right? Like their lifetime of America. They're all like, nah, this fucking shit sucks. Right. And I think these people are like kind of the same way. There's not a lot of the what the film lacks, and what my guess is the books have, is like a lot of condemnation for what like America is. Usually in these kinds of like right-wing narratives, this manifests as like scenes of weakness from like a current world that is doomed in this, you know, coming next world, right? Is that true, by the way?
What's true?
Are there scenes of like American weakness that's like in the like current versions of like, you know, libtards and stuff, like people who are like the reasons why America failed?
Yeah. In the book, yes. Yeah. There are people, they talk about, like, they don't exactly name like tech billionaires. They do mention like billionaires are running things like this. They mentioned that we've become too reliant on Walmarts of the world, on everything being hand delivered to us. You know, this
everybody
is written
in, complaining about capitalism, man. It's so funny. Yeah, everybody's like, so would you like to close off foreign markets and create a serious industrial policy in the United States? And they're like, that sounds like fucking communism to me. It's like, okay, well, fine, man. Whatever you say.
So yeah, they are critical of the system. And I mean, this was released in 2014. So Obama was the president, and he was, you know, pushing his vision of tech solutionism that I'm sure these two people were very, very against, because Ross does not have any money tied up in social media apps. So he either hates it or he missed the fucking boat and he's a baby about it.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that's so interesting that this film is informed by a book that comes out of like the like Tea Party era. Right. Like the end of the Obama era. And now it's like especially incoherent because like Trump is, by the way, was president and is about to be the president again. I mean, this movie doesn't know that he was going to win the election. Right. But like,
yeah,
like the never ending, the like dream of right, the Hillary campaign is that like, you know, the Democratic Party's never going to lose another election after 2008. And like that didn't work.
Right.
And like, and so the other thing is not only that these people kind of like wish for this, but I think an earnestly very interesting part of Homestead, the film, it's one of the two actually interesting themes in it, right? The one which I already talked about, which is the kind of like the Martian style, like tech angle as to like how you're going to solve these like agricultural problems in post-apocalypse, right? Because that's not really in it. It was just like a snippet that I thought was funny. There's the like the societal breakdown and like the event, right? The happening, as I call it. That's like the first maybe 20 minutes of this movie. And it's like pretty fun and good. But then the other theme that keeps cropping up throughout the movie is the theme of like, what do we owe each other, right? Like as Americans, as like humans, right? Like, again, a thing that Angel Studios media has butted up against more than once, which is like, how do you square Christianity and American capitalism? Right. This like need to be communal and share with, you know, God's other creations, other men, right, and women, right, with the idea that you own property and it's yours, right, and especially that there is scarcity and you need what you have possibly to survive. And to do that, you have to forego that communalism that, you know, that Christianity would otherwise inspire. And like the way that Homestead does this, it's so like, it's so just right under the surface that I'm like, wait, they don't understand, I don't think, that they're just talking about America, right? Like when Neil McDonough's character and his wife, right, like they go to the front of the homestead, right? There's like a wall with like a chain link fence, and they encounter all of these townspeople who are like literally begging for food.
Yeah.
And these are, by the way, mostly white people. They're all white people. So there's not like a racial angle as there might have been in the book. I don't even know if the begging comes into play in the book. But like these are certainly their compatriots. There's no like weird angsty kind of separation that makes these people other than them. The only reason that they don't just like hand fork over all the shit that they have is because presumably through the logic of the film, they know that they're going to need it or they will starve. Right. And it's like, wait, are we just talking about like America here? Right. They are prosperous. Right. They could work something out, as they do, by the way, in the end. But it just seems like such an incredibly naked metaphor for like inequality in America or like inequality in the world. It feels like the people that are in the homestead are Americans protected by the American military, prosperous and like looking out on destitution and poverty around the world and just being like, I might need this stuff, right? Like I'm going to let this food go bad because I might need it while you're starving out there. I don't know. Am I like reading too much into this?
No.
Okay. And so if you don't think so, then are these people aware that they're doing this? Also, no, I don't think they know. I don't think they know that.
Maybe. I mean, I definitely think these guys are collecting a paycheck and feeling good about it.
Do they know they're talking about America?
I need you to repeat your theory here, man. Okay. It's a little esoteric. So
I'm sorry.
Envisioning a world where these survivors are Americans protected by the American military.
Just homestead. I think it's an allegory for America. For like America, it's income inequality inside America. It's so nakedly a parable for that.
Okay.
Or like America and the world, right? And like, do they know that they accidentally made this like thing lambasting how fucking rich we are and how we, you know, aren't helping the rest of the world when we could?
You know, I don't know if they're aware of it, but it's there, right? The allegory of they're jealous.
There.
They're jealous of our freedom. They're jealous of the things we have. This is also the first time these Green Berets, these special forces that train to fight overseas, they've never and will never see military action on our home soil. So they had to imagine a scenario where they are doing it. So this is the first time where they're actually fighting a defensive front instead of an offensive preemptive strike kind of front.
Yeah, like I guess my question isn't about military. It's about like literally watching people starve. Okay, should we talk about
no?
Let's
pick that scab a little bit. So
that's so gross.
Okay, let's dig a little deeper on that. So do they realize that this movie is an allegory? No, they don't realize it. They would never. Only through a critical lens can we see that. Only through our critical analysis can we make that comparison.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
No, these people aren't going to say no, because think of how the movie ends with we should open our doors and let all these refugees in.
Maybe somebody at Angel Studios believes that. That would be pretty cool.
Maybe. I mean, maybe they're going through the minds of we have to have a Christian nation. We have to have a Christian nationalist America before we can have a Christian nationalist world.
Oh, maybe. Yeah.
Like we have to start here and spread out. Maybe.
Before we can share, you say you have to love Jesus.
They like, definitely seem to think that a Christian nationalist world can be post-racial. I don't know if they can actually like. I don't think they can see what we're seeing.
No, I don't think so either. Unfortunately.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe Angel Studios is playing 8D chess. They pulled one over on me. Who fucking knows?
Yeah. They fucking got Connor. Is there anything to be said about like the little subplot with the government bureaucrat? Because it just like, it goes nowhere. By the way, I would like to like list a couple things that go nowhere in the show, and you can tell me whether or not they're in the TV show.
Yeah, I mean the government agent does guest star in the first episode. He and the SWAT cop are looking at the homestead through binoculars. They're analyzing everything. Turns out they have a mole, which is Ian Ross's assistant. So they're monitoring the homestead. In episode two, it's revealed that, you know, the mole and the government agent are setting up a discreet attack against the homestead. They want their supplies.
They must not need it that bad if they're still alive. I don't know. None of this.
They're alive. They're well. They're wearing their puffer vest. They have a SWAT vest. Yeah. They have a SWAT team. Like, they don't.
It does have like the Patagonia on in every scene. It's very funny.
They don't seem to be needing anything. That's the thing. That's what's there, right? Is that this government agent doesn't need it. He wants it because it belongs to someone else. The government just wants your property. They don't care about you. They don't care if you're alive or you're dead. They just want your money. They want your gold backs, which are featured in the film. They want your wheat supplies. they want, or at the very least, they want to control your wheat supplies. They want to know
your
how
Trump
much
commemorative
you,
gold coins.
Yeah, they want this character wants an inventory of everything so he can take his taxes from it. He said there's still taxes to be paid. The government is the enemy in this.
Rapacious government bureaucrats. This is like very what is it, Ballad of the Three Kingdoms? No.
Battle of the Three Kingdoms?
Yeah, yeah.
Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Is yeah, very Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Like rapacious government bureaucrats, yeah. Like corrupt government officials. Why don't these guys like China? They don't know anything about China.
Will you side with Roth? Will you side with Erickson? Or will you side with me, Liu Bei?
Yeah, cow. Yeah. Fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah, we got to get this movie on Zhao Hongxue.
Fuck yeah, dude. I want to see a Chinese version of this.
What else?
Well, there's 2 billion people in the homestead. Okay. So I also assume that like the weird kid prophecy thing goes nowhere. Let me just like dive into bloopers, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. So this will be our first one, which is a girl draws a picture of a tree. And it was like even confusing in the movie because the guy like when he like looks at a TV and it's got just like the mushroom cloud on it. And then he like holds up the tree picture. And it like kind of looks similar. And I'm like, wait, they're not serious, right? He's like, she knew. And I was like, what the fuck is happening in this
movie?
Yeah.
Okay. So she is prominently featured in the series. She is having prophetic visions. It's revealed that when Erickson was a DEA agent, he found her in a crack den and saved her. So she smoked crack as a kid and now can see the future, apparently. But yeah, she's prominently featured in it. She's not in the book at all. I think this is, I mean, prophecy and Christianity go hand in hand. So I think she was a Christian element included.
Especially Mormon Christianity, right?
Yeah, that's the other thing is that we know Angel Studios is a Mormon-owned company, but the authors of the book have come out repeatedly to say this is not a Mormon book. This is not a Mormon series. We will never be a Mormon series. So there seems to be some clash there, but hey, what heals all wounds better than a fat fucking check?
That's what I'm talking about, baby.
Yeah. All right. What else? What else do you got?
All right. We got bloopers. So number one, in the first like 2 minutes of the movie, we see our, I guess they're Filipino, just them drying out those tiny little fish on the boat. I don't know if you noticed that. I was like, those fish are small. When they arrive at the homestead, so like when the all the operator fuckers, right, like get in their like giant Humvees and shit, when one of them has a Humvee, one of them's in like a expedition or whatever, and they take the, you know, leisurely 20-minute drive across 3 states to get to fucking Colorado, it's really, really funny how they have this like this aerial drone shot of the homestead, and it's just like a shitty McMansion. And I'm like, oh, that's pretty disappointing, actually.
Yeah. In the book, I believe it all takes place in Utah.
That makes so much more sense.
Yeah. I mean, the Mormon church, that's the crazy thing about why they're saying, like, it's not Mormon. The Mormon church is featured pretty prominently, at least in the first book. I don't know about the rest of them.
Speaking of their arrival at the homestead, when we first like see the inside of the homestead, it's because the news is on because a nuke went off or whatever. And Neil McDonough's at his house. He's just sitting at like a desk chair watching the news with like a Carhartt on and like a cowboy hat in the house. He's just like, I'm a ranch guy. And this is what I wear around the fuck. I wear my hat inside.
He never takes that fucking hat off. He's got a cowboy hat on every single scene.
I assume they take it off when he gets shot, but anyway.
He's not wearing it when he gets shot. The real Ross does not wear a cowboy hat in anything I've seen him in. The real Ross makes a cameo appearance in the second episode of the Homestead TV show, and I was very pissed off by how good he was in that scene.
See, that's so funny, because I thought he was going to be a rancher. That's like rancher coded, and then he's just some fucking business guy. He's just some suburban asshole. He's a LARPer.
Yep. He's also wearing a puffy vest.
Oh, he's also, yeah, he's the same kind of guy. Anyway, as soon as stuff starts like falling apart in society, they mention like looting a bunch of times on the news. There's so much funny shit in the beginning of this movie. There's a stupid scene where the head militia guy, Ian Ross, right?
Erickson.
Ross Erickson?
Ross is the businessman. Erickson is the... Dude, you think that's bad? Their names are Jeff and Jason in the book, and I could not...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Great job, guys. There's a great scene where like Jeff Erickson has to like run his family down in the car because they left right before the news came on that there's like a nuke, and he like almost cuts off his wife, like he almost crashes her fucking car and like kills his entire family, which is really, really funny. There's a quote from him when he's like explaining himself where he's like, I keep good people safe from bad people. And it's like, yeah, that's what I do. And it's like, oh, my God, it's his, like it's his most Batman moment.
He says in the movie and a TV show, he says multiple times, this is what I do. When I don't do it, people die.
Yeah. Neil McDonough keeps saying the words instead of the government, he says government or FEMA. And it's like FEMA's. He was a part of the government, man. Like, yeah. I don't know why they kept that in the fucking script. Another thing that's funny is like Neil McDonough's daughter, who's like what the love character.
Yeah,
right?
Claire.
Claire. Claire's the like the teenage, you know, the princess of the castle, I guess, or whatever. Right. She's like, she keeps saying like lib shit. Like, this is how we heal the planet, which is.
Yeah,
it's like very funny, right? Like,
well, there's something in homestead culture where it's Christian stewards of the planet. Like it's a Christian based environmentalism, which I was surprised to discover when I was looking into this stuff. They're not as monolithic as we think they are. Like they have some, like what you said, is like this sound, you're critiquing capitalism and you're a capitalist, like that kind of thing.
It's like, well, it's especially weird because in this movie, like in the apocalypse, they just run generators all the time. So there's power and they're like driving cars around, like nothing changes. Right. Except that everybody has to move out to the middle of fucking nowhere, I guess. Right. Or like it's not even the middle of nowhere. It's on the outskirts of a little town. Right. Like they're not even far. They're not even like in the middle of a national park or something. So the idea that they're like healing the planet, it's like, well, you have a generator running like 24/7. Like, what are we talking about? Speaking of which, in this post-apocalypse, a Bitcoin gets mentioned and everybody's like running these like shortwave radios and stuff, which is also really funny. Like,
yeah, I kind of want to touch on that because Angel Studios had a big giveaway where if you bought advanced tickets to Angel Studios, you'd be entered in a raffle where you could get a bunch of homesteading stuff. This included a tiny home, an electric bike, those buckets of slop that Christian fundamentalists are always selling on TV. and one thing was you get one Bitcoin. And nothing.
That's a lot of fucking money.
It's a lot of fucking money, but it's also like, yeah, when society collapses and the grid goes down, let me rely on my digital currency in order to, like, you know, exchange goods with my neighbor.
Yeah.
Like, you give me eggs and a cow, and I give you one Bitcoin.
Yeah. The meme, the like, the businessman meme. So I don't know if this is a reference to Alex Garland's Civil War, but Texas and California were mentioned as a team up. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
It's really funny. And I was like, ooh.
It's not that they teamed up, it's that they both seceded and took over their national guards.
Okay. I thought they did the actual like Texas, California.
No, they didn't team up, but they did. I think there's a reason why Alex Garland mentioned those two states in particular, and why this movie mentioned those two states in particular, is California has our big blue pocket
and a
lot of red.
Sure.
California has a lot of deeply conservative gun people.
Yeah. I just have like a bunch of funny quotes. So like Abe is the biracial son of the main mercenary guy, Erickson, right? So like, amongst bad acting in this movie, his is some of the worst.
Yeah.
I don't know what I feel anymore is just one of those classic like bad movie lines. I love it. Every time I hear something like that, there's like a couple permutations of it, but I don't even know what I feel anymore is like perfect. I think the father. So like after Abe shoots the like hunter guy, the like hapless moron hunter, he says like, he's probably someone's father. Which is like a really, really odd like phrase. I don't know. It just like really stuck
out
to me.
They pull his wallet out and they see there's a family photo in there. And that's their way of being like, I think it's a nod to the book because the book, it's several chapters about this guy to the point where I was like, oh, this guy's going to join a homestead. I'd seen the movie twice, then read the book. I still didn't see it coming based on how they treated his character in the movie.
And then just like all, I just have like, I'm not even going to read them all out, but just like all of the like stupid operator shit. Like they have like the shithead Oakley sunglasses and they have like the tack vests on all the time and they're putting their fucking thumbs in the tack vest like they do in like all the operator movies. They say like negative and shit like constantly. It's so fucking annoying.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny. Holy fuck.
And for the listeners, if you want to explore this world and read these books, I also, this is what I do in order to like make sure I maintain focus, is I read a book and I also listen to the audiobook at the same time. And I highly recommend the audiobook because the white guy who reads it does all the accents and all the voices.
That rules. So it's like one last thing about the operators. There's like an asshole operator who's like this prick Marine, right? And he does like a little spiel that like
his name is Bing. Or Bing.
His name is, of course,
it's Bing. It's Bing.
He has this little spiel about how like everyone's a sheep and he's a wolf or whatever, which they like in the movie, they like roll their eyes at, but they're still doing all of the other operator shit, which makes it like also like extra funny.
Yeah.
Anyway,
they treat him like an asshole. And the only thing that makes him an asshole is that he's like lone wolf survive. And they point out like lone wolves don't survive. We're pack animals.
Yeah. So like that self-awareness versus not self-awareness is another like classic like right-wing movie thing. Anyway, I had a lot of fun watching this. I had a lot of fun talking about it. I don't even think this is really like bad enough to watch ironically, but we're here.
No, I mean, I think one of the most chilling things about this stuff is that it shows that Angel Studios is starting to make better movies. They're learning. They just announced they're doing an adaptation of a Charles Dickens story about Jesus, and Oscar Isaac is playing the lead. So,
oh no way!
Yeah, I mean, these people are getting like A-listers now. So keep an eye on it. I think within 5 years, Angel Studios will have like an Oscar nomination at the very least.
Okay, I have to say this movie did look pretty good, right? And
yeah,
and if you watch it again, if you watch it, to me, the most interesting thing is like how they just accidentally and clearly make an allegory for like inequality. And they're just like, oh, why can't we do the Christian thing? It should be easier. And it's like, you don't have to wait till the end of the world to do that. You could just do that now.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean, man. Like, instead of preparing for the apocalypse, improve the world around us. Instead of this is like Dust Bug Zarathustra, man. Instead of focusing on the afterlife, improve the world around you. Improve your material conditions.
This is like Nietzsche. All right, you want to call it? I think that's enough homesteading for us.
Yeah, that's enough for us. I'd love to stay in chat, but I gotta go fortify my front yard and make sure my neighbors can't see me and my fiance walking around.
Something big is coming, Connor. I've been preparing for months. I gotta take a nasty shit.
Excelsior, propagandos, and keep your eyes on the skies.
Bye.
And the skies are not cloudy all day. The red man was pressed from this part of the west. 'Tis unlikely he'll ever return to the banks of Red River, where seldom, if ever, their flickering campfires burn.